Have you heard about this videotape that kills you when you watch it?
What kind of tape?
A tape. A regular tape. People run it, I don't know. You start to play it, and it's like somebody's nightmare. Then suddenly, this woman comes on, smiling at you, right? Seeing you through the screen. And as soon as it's over, your phone rings. Someone knows you've watched it. And what they say is, you will die in 7 days. And exactly 7 days later.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop. With me, as always, is Trish Coughlin.
Hey, everybody.
And Sam Stepanenko.
Boo.
And with that really, really depressing boo, it's Halloween.
Yeah.
Ish. Not yet. Yes. We got a ways
it's
to go. But
sorry, it is I'll do the boo again if you like. I go, boo.
All right. That's a little bit better. Okay. Well, I'd like to say it's tradition, but this is only your second year, so it's becoming a tradition.
Yeah.
October, we do all horror movies of various genres, and with the Rings coming out at the end of October here, I neglected to look at the date. I think it's the 28th, but I could be wrong.
It's going to be Halloween-ish.
Yeah, it's in the 20s.
Yeah,
October,
so whenever the weekend Halloween happens.
The third American Ring movie, Rings, is coming out. So we thought we'd take a look back at the Japanese film as well as the American remake by Gore Verbinski.
Mm-hmm.
Verbinski.
You've got to say it very horror. Verbinski.
And, you know, honestly, after watching this, I'm like, oh, god damn, I wish you'd done more of this before you went on to Pirates and now you're just too good for the genre.
Yeah, I know. I know, because it was decently done. Like, he added to it. It was pretty.
And he's also at fault for doing it so well that everybody and their dog had to remake every Japanese horror movie made in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, certainly, he was definitely the responsible for that influx of remakes of J-horror, for sure.
Yeah, well, J-horror got coined by the success of The Ring. The Ring, also known as Ringu, which I know I'm mispronouncing because it's got a more of a schwa sound.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my Japanese is pretty rusty, as in non-existent. So, you know, Ringu for us American side of,
North
of
American.
The planet. North American side of the planet. You know, that was such a big success in Japan that, of course, the Americans had to tackle it as well and make their changes. The original novel is by Koji Suzuki, who also wrote the novel Dark Water, which also was made into a Japanese movie, which was also remade. So we may cover that down the road.
Nice.
But we'll spread out the J-horror a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, we may do something this month. We're
discussing something fun.
Yeah, we're discussing something fun. The screenplay was Hiroshi Takahashi, and it pretty much was screenplay writer for most of the other Japanese versions of The Ring. Directed by Hideo Nakata, who did the other Ring movies in Japan and also did the American Ring 2.
Nice.
Yeah. Budgeted at $1.2 million US, it grossed about 1 billion yen, which is about 9.7 million in Japan, which is the most successful horror movie they had up until, I think, 2015, and I don't remember the name of the movie that dethroned it. So, yeah, there you go. Starring Nanako... Oh, this is going to suck.
Do you want me to try?
No. I'm actually not that bad with the Japanese names. Nanako Matsushima, She was Reiko. Gorgeous woman, by the way.
Very, mm-hmm. very attractive just, woman.
Wow. Miki Nakatani is Mao. Mao? Yeah. I got through the first name. I'm not even going to try the second name. Yuko Takuchi, Hitomi Sato, Yauchi Numata. I know I'm just... As I go on, it's getting worse, isn't it? I'm not even going to try anymore. And some mispronounceable names.
Let's face it, we don't know who these people are anyhow.
No.
Aside from seeing them in this film, it's not like...
I'm a little bit better with the martial arts guys. Yeah. And
they tend to have short, abrupt names, kind of like the work they do, right? Like, very aggressive.
I wanted to do Sudeiko, but I'm like, I can't even do that one. Is Ray... Yeah.
I could try it.
Hiroyuki Sanada. I like that one. That was Ryuji.
I liked him.
Yeah, yeah. And trying to track down, just figure out the actors' names and then tracking them down. I kind of making notes along the way when I'm watching this movie. And like, oh, that was a name.
Yeah.
I think there was a name there. Just trying to track things and track it back. And like the cousin who passed away, Tomoko, at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
I think it was pretty much midway through the movie where I figured out her name.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I got that at the funeral.
Yeah, that's where I got it.
Yeah,
I guess at the very beginning they
do mention it.
Yeah. Oh, sure, like, but Tomoko. You know, when everything sounds Japanese, I don't know which is a name and which is just a word.
Oh, see, I had subtitles on, and that just took me to where the names were.
Yeah, I had the subtitles on.
That's how too, I got Ryuji.
Yeah,
I'm constantly hitting pause, writing things down, and oh, by the way, whoever subtitled my version, fuck you, fuck you hard.
If there was the times where they'd white, like you couldn't read anything because it was up against a white background.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, okay. I had a much better version.
So angry.
Okay, whoever did mine, great job.
So that's probably why I lost a few names along the way.
Oh, yeah,
it's possible, yeah. But I mean, clearly we saw the same version, right?
Oh, like put a border around it. Put a fucking border around it. If it's a white shirt, and you got white text. Guess what disappears? The text I'm trying to read. You dumbasses.
haven't figured that out.
No.
I mean, in the 90s, they figured out that yellow with a black border works really well, but they still do it in white.
But isn't it like just a separate file that is added to the movie?
But you still get to set the text style, color, and everything.
Yeah, but I mean, you're going to have the background of the movie. There's going to be dark moments where that white's going to be great. So if you have dark text, that's going to get lost at other parts of the movie.
That's why yellow with black works so
well. Yeah, believe it or not, this is not a particularly dark film. It has dark moments, yes. But it's not like dark in tone all the way through.
I mean, really, this movie's not even all that scary until the last 15 minutes.
No, I'd actually call this like a dramatic ghost story, like Ghost Story was. Like, it's got some moments of horror, but it's a PG-13. The American one was PG-13, and I don't know how the Japanese ratings work, but very similar. It was as close as you can get to all ages horror, right?
Yeah,
I like your reference to Ghost Story because it is very similar in the sense that it is basically a murder mystery that happens to be a ghost story.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, really, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, they're finding the murderer who is a ghost.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, totally.
But it's even more so because she was murdered, right? I'm sorry, spoiler.
if they haven't seen it, I don't know what we can do. It was 1998. It's like 20 years ago.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, realistically, I mean, it's a double murder mystery, right? You've got a murdered child who's now become a murderer.
Well, a quadruple murder mystery at the beginning with the four kids, the four teenagers. Yeah. Then you get like, you add a fifth murder and a sixth murder.
Well, the murders kind of start with those teenagers and anybody... okay, going back a second. They talk at the beginning of both films. The teenagers talk of, have you heard about this tape that kills people? If the tape was born at the cabin, which they kind of allude to, saying it overrode the tape they brought to watch of the football game and the American one. I can't remember what it was. It was something similar sports for the Japanese. It was a baseball game. And they were going to watch the cabin there. Now, if Sudeiko or Samara had overridden that tape, then that tape was born there. So how is there an urban legend about a tape that kills people if nobody's died yet?
They explain that at the beginning of Ringu. It's actually a kid who's gone on vacation, and he wanted to tape a favorite show because he wasn't going to be home to watch it. So he set it to the channel that his show was on at home and recorded his show. But it wasn't his show. He got the tape. Yes. And that's the original tape. And the kids at the cabin actually watched that tape while they were there because they didn't have anything to watch.
Okay, that one makes more sense then.
Yes.
But
I was disappointed they changed that in the remake.
Yeah, because the remake, they do talk about it, but it sounds like that's the original tape.
But this also feeds into, like I was telling you guys before we started recording, is I have this book on, like, whole urban legends and how they're kind of born of sort of fables about things. But also, they're born of, like, maybe some obscure story with, like, a weird note to it, but it, in and of itself, isn't spooky. Like, you can have urban legends like this where the child wanted to record something and it didn't record, and then later the child died, but it's unrelated. But by passing this story on, the story becomes its own entity, and then the tape becomes the thing to blame. So I don't know if it might be just in this movie. Yeah, this is probably what happened to the kid, but if you look at, like, the urban legends itself, this thing could have just been a thing that the kids knew about. And I don't know, maybe it happened later and it just happened to feed into this.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe Sudoku.
Maybe the other one sounds like a puzzle.
Yeah, Sudoku. Maybe Sudoku, like, had heard about this or had, I don't know, maybe it come, been born of, like, this living tale.
That's a fascinating take on it, for sure.
Yeah, no, and it makes sense, right? This all ties into some of the revelations later in the movie about that region. I think it's Izu, because it all happened there, right? And that's where he was on vacation, and that's where the legend came from, was because they talk about how it happened in Izu.
Yeah.
Right? So they explain it a little bit better in the original J-horror. They make it a little more believable.
You know, in the American one, I did appreciate how they, and I think maybe they overdid it, because everything had symbolism in that movie.
Like, oh, yeah, they really went for it.
Now, before we get too heavy into this, where do you think the title comes from?
When the well is covered, you see the light outside it.
Sam, where do you think
that the title was what comes? I was thinking too.
Okay. That would have been my initial assessment, but the novelist and this makes perfect sense to me. It's basically a description of the cyclic nature of the virus. Yeah.
Liking that. I like that a lot better than just the ring of light.
It's funny because you'd ask the average North American, they might have just said the phone call, the ring of the phone.
Oh.
So I'm glad neither one of you said that, because I never thought that either.
No. No,
well, yeah.
It's pretty apparent to me that that's how they intended you to see it, was because they even the poster showed the ring of light from the well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the tape at a certain point, too. Yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So yeah, that was why we made that assumption. But I certainly like the cyclical nature of it as being the name for the...
Yeah, the completion of that whole sequence of events ends in 7 days and then just restarts with somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Well, something else I noticed is the difference in the Japanese advertising versus the American advertising. I'm going to run the American one a little later, but I think I'm going to run the Japanese trailer right now. Now, for you Japanese listeners, thank you for enduring us our terrible Japanese pronunciations and us consistently and always will do the show in English, but this trailer's in Japanese. You're welcome. For the Americans... Yeah, that's why you have that 15-second button on your iPod.
or no, just listen to it, roll with it.
But it is. It's kind of neat. The difference.
I love the sound of Japanese.
Yeah, I was going to say.
For a Japanese horror movie, it's a very upbeat sounding trailer. we'll get into that. All right. Well, we'll run that and talk about that some more. どんなビデオか聞いたことある?私が聞いたのは、なんかいきなり怖い女の人が映って、お前は一週間後に死ぬって、そういうのなんですけど、ビデオ見た子がいて、その子を彼氏と車で出てしまって死んだって。死に方じゃないわよ。トモコ!トモちゃん呪いのビデオ見たんだよ。 Anybody got your glow sticks?
Yeah.
Little
MDMA horror.
It felt like that club scene in Blade.
Yeah. We were thinking, yeah, the softcore porn vampire film.
Yeah. Sexy porn vamp.
And then the Japanese kind of pop music kicks in at the end. But oh my God.
It is disturbingly upbeat for a movie with the tone of this movie.
Yeah.
Or film or trailer. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when I was watching the trailer, I could have read it out to you because they actually had subtitles, but mm-hmm. I liked it better in Japanese. I liked the sound of Japanese.
Oh, yeah.
But they got the fucking subtitling right, white with black borders.
Yeah.
I'm angry.
Yes.
You're angry about the subtitles. I will have to show you where I found mine, and then you can watch it for a little bit in peace and be like, ah.
I have a copy of the movie, and then I realized it's only in Korean and Japanese, and that's how it's why it probably didn't sit in my brain too well, is because I'd watched the movie with not knowing what was going on the first time I'd seen it. So yeah, I can actually, yeah, I can do Korean or Japanese, but that's all I got.
Yeah. This was my first time seeing it, because I'll be honest, I don't really, really like these movies. I don't mind them, but I don't really like them. So the when I saw the American version when it came out, I'm like, okay, it wasn't bad, but I had no interest in seeing the original.
What is it about like these types of movies that doesn't appeal?
I don't know. That's the thing. There's no reason I can identify it, but I just don't find them as engaging as I would expect, because I'd really like psychological horror like this, but for some reason they just didn't engage me. And in a rewatching, I wasn't that engaged. I will admit I liked the American version more than I thought I would on a rewatch. So I saw more in it this time than I did the first time. But it's still, like I said, it's not one of those movies that screams classic at me.
Is it the cultural context of ghosts that's different? That doesn't?
No. I think that when these movies were made, they were already sort of dated. I think that's part of the problem. Because even when you watch the Japanese version, the production quality is pretty...
Well,
low,
I mean,
right?
They're not working with American budget.
I still think it's fairly decent.
Exactly, that's part of it. But even in the 4 years between when it was made and when we saw The Ring, which with a much bigger budget, obviously.
By the time the Americans remade it, we had the Japanese had three or four of them. I know that they had.
Well, didn't The Ring 2 come out at the same time as the first one?
Yeah, and that was their second sequel. The Ring 2 was after Spiral. The Japanese name was Raisin. Rasen. But yeah, American pronunciation is Spiral, and they went back to the original source material, which I don't think people dug too much, and that's why the Japanese Ring 2 came out, continuing the story with the characters from this film. The Americans did something similar with theirs, obviously, two different tracks. Otherwise, in 2 weeks, I'd like to cover Ring 2, but it's not a remake. So.
I can't explain what it is that just doesn't engage me about these movies, but I think part of it is by the time they came out, we were already starting to see technology surpassing VHS.
Yeah, by the time it came out for us in North America for 2002, you would think the Japanese would even be ahead of us in that regard. The VHS was already going out the door, like when the movie was released on DVD and VHS at the time.
But weren't people still recording stuff on VHS? I believe they were in 2002.
Yeah, I would think so.
So a homemade tape would still be VHS.
Yeah. Most likely.
It was out the door, going out the door at that point.
Oh, it's on the down slope, but it doesn't mean
TiVos
it's gone.
TiVos and things like that weren't quite out yet.
They're just starting to. I think they were just nascent at that time.
Maybe that's the problem with like technology based horror, is there is a shelf life for it.
That is definitely the tricky bit with that. I don't know if it's the first time we've seen something like that, but I like how they took something, a traditional Japanese ghost story, wrapping it into the commentary on media.
And that's the thing is that, like I said, I still don't understand why I don't enjoy these movies more, because I love the imagery, I love the subtext of the films, but it must be something about the way they're telling the story that's just not quite grabbing me. Particularly the Japanese version, because it takes a long time to get going.
It's mm-hmm. It takes a little longer. They don't give you as much as Gore Verbinski does. Like, there's a lot of symbolism in his movie, mm-hmm. and
it's
it's really heavy-handed.
Actually,
yeah. After a few watches on that thing, now it's amazing how much like there is nothing wasted in that movie.
No.
Everything means something in that movie.
But see, I didn't mind the subtlety of the Japanese.
Yeah,
one.
The Japanese one doesn't spoon feed you. It didn't have. They didn't go out of their way to say the 1 week rule. You found out by the end of that week. That's as people realize. Oh, they watch this movie and it's a week. That's kind of how you find out. It's not like the phone call told you that. It was the phone call and some weird noises.
Yeah. Like, they knew about the phone call, but like the 1 week thing was sort of figured out at the beginning, because you found out all of these teens died exactly 1 week afterwards.
Yeah. And so, that's just it. Yeah. They did the math. And I'd say both characters, Reiko and Rachel, were very good at putting the pieces together and logically.
Mm-hmm.
Although it did bother me that Reiko was already kind of investigating the story before really anything prompts her to.
No, I liked that. That was one of the things I liked better about the original, was the fact that she was already interviewing on it, because it gave more backstory to the myth or the urban legend, right? Because it established that it existed prior to her cousin dying. Right.
Yeah, and see, I thought she was actually doing just in general urban legends. I thought that was her overall investigation.
Yeah, I found it a little too convenient. Like, I kind of needed a device to kind of push her to there, because it was still her cousin or her sister or something that passed away. So it was a family member that passed away at the beginning of that film. So that is a good device to kind of drive her to investigate, but she was already investigating.
See, but I interpreted it not as so much as she was investigating,
she was
but sort of documenting.
She was doing her job.
Documenting, like, urban legends. I took it as, like, she was going in with a certain amount of skepticism, because she does have a conversation with her coworker, like, yeah, no, this thing isn't. There's all sorts of urban legends, and not many of them are true. Like, I thought she started off as a skeptic, and having her cousin die was what was the catalyst for her actually doing more and thinking more.
Yeah, you did get the feeling she's not taking it too seriously at the beginning of the film.
Yeah, like, I thought just it was part to get over that change in character.
Yeah.
And it did establish her as a television journalist, which helped, right? Because that was one thing I found kind of lacking in the remake, was once Rachel was a print journalist,
mm-hmm.
which, again,
you're talking about obsolete technology.
Again, that's just what I was saying. Yeah, something that's
it's still back 2002.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was still
papers were on their way out.
But
they really were.
Reiko being a television journalist made a lot more sense in context for the film, because it gave her a better understanding of her analysis of the video. She didn't need a third party to help her analyze parts of the video.
Oh,
she did end up with her ex-husband helping her, but she didn't need him to analyze the certain things within it. And I liked that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the remake, Rachel
knows nothing about video.
Knows nothing about video, and there's somebody else has to tell her about camera angles and stuff like that. So I liked that device better.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of her role as a journalist.
Yeah, I kind of like that too. I think it was a little bit better to have that second pair of eyes from the Japanese one, rather than this reliance on her ex-husband, who's more of an expert in it. You know, she might not have been the specialist in the Japanese one, but mm-hmm. she knew what she was talking about. She knows camera angles and things like that. And then
like
she
any
can,
good journal, television journalist.
Yeah, then she can pull in her ex-husband for some expertise.
Yeah.
Although I get the feeling that if you know what this might possibly do, is this you just hate your ex-husband?
Well, the thing is, I like that change in dynamic where she brings him in because he is someone who is different. Like, she knows he's got this little bit of there's something not normal about him.
Yeah.
And that's his specialty. She's a specialist in the videotape. I like that.
I
loved it.
When they finally reveal that everybody in that fucking movie is psychic, I'm like, I'm out.
Everybody isn't.
Oh, I was so ticked off. She's got a little bit. He's got a lot. Like, what?
Oh, no, she isn't. Fuck. She's being pulled in. She has none of it.
Oh, no, no. She's, when she touches the, well, maybe you can say
she's
that's
a victim
the ghost
of it. They have hallucinations. Yeah. Well, the other woman had hallucinations in the remake, and you're telling me that she's not psychic, but she has hallucinations.
That's fine, because it feels like it's more driven by Samara than a character going, wow.
Yeah, but you know, that's the thing.
I am like this.
No, so what is she's that lady's not. Name? She's being dragged into the hallucination. She doesn't want to be there.
But Ryuji isn't.
Ryuji isn't, no. But she is.
But at one point, she's at the top of that well, and she touches it like with intent. Like she needs to see something. So I got the feeling she was also had some.
Really, Naomi
too.
Watts was having a ton of hallucinations as well. She goes into her son's room.
Those I felt like
Samara's
were more
there.
Driven by Samara.
They were an effect of the viewing of the video rather than an innate ability.
And that was the thing with the Japanese woman. She was being affected by it.
I didn't get that sense with it. Sorry.
She was.
I didn't get that sense by it.
Yeah, no, I could see going either way. I'm not. I think it was originally intended to be an effect of watching the video. And I think that was supposed to have that effect on everybody. But I think that the North American version made it more apparent that it was an effect of the video. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Japanese film made it feel like the video gave them the ability somehow, or activated this ability that was already inherent in them that they didn't know they had.
Mm-hmm.
So it did change it a little bit.
Yeah. And it did bug me that Ryuji, it felt like a third act reveal with him. Like, suddenly he's, oh, by the way, I can do this too.
But it's a different...
I hated him. This is my issue with
I like the actor. I just didn't like that device. I'm like, oh, that's clown.
But you hate that device in any movie. You feel it's magic and you feel it's a cheat 100% of the time.
There needs to be rules. Yes. It's such a terrible...
But if you hate that cheat, why do you believe that Samara has psychic abilities?
But it's still a ghost story. I mean, come on. You got to...
No, but she started off with psychic abilities before she was a ghost.
But they...
Unnecessary, I think, is the reason you...
Yeah, with Ryuji, it was not necessary to say that. Like, it was... If it had just been something pushed on by the spirit of Sadako, I would have been on board with it. It would have been fine. But it just kind of came out of left field for me.
Yeah.
See, but I kind of took it as the whole point where he was different. So she was thinking at the end, like, he wasn't going to be affected the same way because no phone call came.
Yeah, and they explained that later, but and I like
that.
They
do, yeah.
Yeah, I really did like that.
Yeah, it's because he wasn't there. The phone call happens at the cabin, not in the Japanese one. So
yeah, and
he wasn't
really
present
like that,
for the phone. Right? Yeah, I like that too. Yeah. So he wasn't there to get a warning.
Yeah. Now, I was saying about how much I didn't like him. And I find this, and I don't know why, because Japanese people are such happy people, but in almost every J-horror movie I've seen, like the actual Japanese version, the men always seem very, very angry all the time. Like, they're very serious and stern, and they look upset. And
I don't know if maybe that's just the serious of the tone of the movie, because, you know, I think about it, and I'm like, yeah, you're kind of right.
Yeah.
I think it's just maybe just the tone of the film. It's something that it might be just a cultural thing that's more serious tone, so you don't break that.
But you find the female characters tend to have a bigger range of emotions.
Yeah.
Whereas men just seem to have angry.
Yeah,
really?
Her
father wasn't.
You know, I've seen a few.
Her father was very nice, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen a few.
And her coworker wasn't?
I don't think it's a general rule.
It's not really general. It's just it was something I noticed was very apparent in this particular character.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that was supposed to sort of show more of their backstory, that they don't have a very good relationship because he is this angry man.
You definitely get the feeling that he doesn't really want to be there.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a case of the actor not wanting to be there. That's part of his character. He's helping reluctantly.
Well, she's pulling him in because of what that whole thing.
Yeah, I just
what
thought
you call the third act reveal.
There would have been a better way to show that reluctance. It just felt like they were trying for an undertone within their relationship that didn't work for me.
Yeah. You know, now that I think about it, I don't think it was actually a third act reveal. There was a subtle thing at the beginning where I thought he was kind of a medium coming in, and then they don't really touch on it again. Like, she shows the tape, and he comes out on the balcony, says it's over, come back in. I get the feeling that it wasn't just a camera expertise moment there. Like, he was supposed to feel something out, but they didn't really define that very well.
No,
they didn't show that very well.
Yeah, no, because he was looking at the cultural aspects of the video. Like, he was looking at the language and the
eruption.
The images and stuff like that, rather than the construction of the film, right? The camera angles and so on.
because that's where the clues were in the film. In the remake, the clues are actually like just on the film because that's with all the symbolism.
Yes.
But in this one, the clues are like the words that associate with it, and what you hear in the film is all the clues they get to find out where it came from.
Yeah, and I mean they changed that a lot. They made the video a lot longer in the remake.
Oh yeah.
It's even longer in the sequel.
Yeah.
Oh really?
Oh, it's a little. The video is slightly different in Ring 2, the American remake. It's a little slightly different.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought when you said the Ring 2, I thought it was like never mind.
Yeah, not T O O.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, like there's
well, a Ring 2. I thought 2 as in 2, not the
Ring as well. Yes.
The Ring, the Ring American.
Yes.
Yes. The American sequel. Yeah.
I enjoyed the imagery in the American one a lot. And they had to change things, right?
Because they added a lot more in there to give a much deeper backstory on Samara.
Yeah, and they had to
because they don't give you that much with Sudeikis.
No,
probably with the I don't know if Japanese make things with sequels in mind, but a lot of their stuff gets sequelized and sequelized quickly if it hits. But I don't know if you never really go in with that plan. And I don't know if the author had written the sequel books at that point either. Yeah. So, I just don't know enough about that in particular, but he did write quite a few more. So, well, actually, maybe I guess, and there was probably the other novel, at least one more novel, because the first sequel, Japanese sequel, Spiral, came out the same year.
Yeah.
So, despite the fact it's not really linked, but...
That's a little interesting.
Yeah.
But, they had to change her story quite a bit because they didn't have the volcano reference
By the way, that the American one, when she commits suicide, was it just pills or something?
No, in the American one, she jumps off a cliff.
Oh, she jumps off a cliff. Yeah. She jumps into a volcano. I'm like, well...
If you're going to do it, do it.
If you're going to do it, like, that's amazing.
Yes.
Because to get to the part where you actually have to jump off, you get asphyxiated before that.
Yeah. Not that there's a lot
of... You got to put some effort in.
Yeah, there's not a lot of volcanoes where you can jump
If you're
into.
Japanese, you're going to put the effort in.
Although the movie was in Washington State.
Yeah, Mount St. Helens is right there.
It's right there, but that's a hell of a climb.
Yeah, it is a hell of a climb, and...
Well, then she wasn't trying hard enough.
Yeah, that's no kidding. Like, there's no dedication to your suicide.
Exactly. Go hard or go home.
Yeah, but I think in order to keep the island reference and the all the water references, which were very important, in both films, the references to the water, they needed to change it. And I actually,
water plays a lot in Japanese
it does.
Ghost stories.
It is a thing. It is a giant thing.
And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that their country is surrounded by water. They are an island. It has a lot to do with just everything in general with their culture.
I always thought it had something to do all with the concept of fluidity of like existence.
Then there's probably some of that too, for sure.
Like how, the spirits would be in the water.
Yeah, and I mean, there's other movies. I think even The Grudge kind of touches on that specifically.
Yeah, well, Dark Water.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of those J-horrors that came out at the time were really driven by water. Some of the later ones, not so much. But
yeah, and the funny thing is, in the remake, Gore Verbinski makes that relation to the water a lot more apparent.
Mm-hmm.
Right in that very opening scene, because you have the water in the hallway that she walks through, and I mean, again, I found Gore's version a little heavy-handed in the imagery. Sometimes he catered a lot. He tried to tell people exactly what they were supposed to think.
Did you notice the similarities between the kitchen and the living room from the original to the remake?
Oh yes, yeah. Like he was,
it was like the exactly same kitchen.
Yeah, he was trying really hard to be as true as he could to the original, and you can tell, right? Mm. I mean, he had to make changes out of necessity.
The tape that said "copy" was the original tape from the original film that said "copy."
Oh, nice.
So he just, I don't know,
borrowed
made a phone call and said, "Hey, can you send me that copy?"
That's awesome.
or at least the sticker.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I like that. I mean, you can tell that he really did love the source material.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this before, about loving your source material before you start making something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he definitely had the American audiences in mind. Like, he told a deeper story, but the same story, you know, where more things related visuals in the tape represented something.
Yes.
Yeah. And sometimes in very subtle ways. Like when I was doing some research, I just didn't bother to write it down. But like that fly represents a word in Japanese that meant something. So there's some stuff that would probably went over a lot of people's heads.
Mm-hmm. Mine included. I mean, you have to have a certain understanding in order to catch references like that.
Yeah, I mean, that fly also kind of guided people, their characters, to certain spots as well. Like, there's that fly on the door, and it wasn't just meant to be creepy imagery.
Yeah, and then the fly in the tape that becomes real.
I loved that.
See, now that could be a hallucination. But yeah, like, I thought the fly could possibly be hallucination.
I kind of wondered that myself, but and this goes to speak to how much...
Because she does have a nosebleed after that. Most of the times when they experience something, there's a nosebleed.
That's right. Mm-hmm. They go back to the film, the video, a lot more in the remake, and they give you a lot more, like, to draw you in the, mm-hmm. in the remake. Like, with the first one, there's a lot of talking in Japanese, and like I said, you know what, I love watching movies with subtitles, but there needs to be some sort of break up for me sometimes. In this particular case, I needed something to break up the monotony of the dialogue, and in the remake they did that even though I didn't have to read it. I like the fact they gave you a little bit more, not enough to ruin their big reveal at the end, but enough to keep you interested.
Yeah, you know, I've seen the movie a few times, and, well, the Japanese one I've only seen a couple times, but mm-hmm. I've seen the American one several times, and it is a bit of a slog, you know, it now is. That I've seen it a few times, but maybe when you're putting them back to back, you kind of know the beats mm-hmm. at that point, so it's a lot slower when you're watching it twice in a row.
I need to know why the horses.
Now, yeah, that was one of the, well, I think
that was something a little more identifiable for Americans. You kind of
versus the volcano, yes.
Yeah, true. Like the psychic doctor guy that was investigating Samara's mom and with the reporters, that wasn't going to work so well in North America. So they tried to do something a little more urban, suburban, that would still
urban
work.
Urban horses?
Well, I mean, it's Washington State. There's lots of farms and things like that. So
rural Washington State.
Yeah, that's all there, so it's not out of the realm. And I guess you're close enough to the coast. The island was a little weird, being Washington State, a bit of a drive.
Well, not off Seattle. There's lots of islands off Seattle.
I guess so, yeah.
That's you have true. To have no, the ferry.
That's sorry, right. Twilight's in an island off Seattle.
Yeah, totally.
So, well, they get in the ferry thinking. On the other one, too.
Yeah, and again, they wanted to keep those water references and the trip to the island. And I mean, that trip to the ferry trip to the island was traumatic in that.
Yeah. Well, in North American ghost stories, animals in general tend to react. Mm-hmm. And it meant something. Like, Samara, when was kept in the barn, at the top of the barn in the remake, and the horses were keeping her up all night. So there's always references to the horses. So she has animosity to the horses. And if somebody's touched by Samara, a horse might sense that.
They don't like that.
It all kind of made sense to me along the way.
Oh, no, I just was curious, like, the decision to use horses. That was just my only question.
Yeah, I think that was just trying to, we got to recreate
horses drowning themselves was what I was confused by.
I think that actually makes sense to me, too, because she's getting revenge on horses, which she hates, and they're dying in the same way she did.
I guess, yeah, but right? If she's getting revenge on the horses and the people who watched the tape...
Well,
she's pretty vengeful.
This is a vengeful spirit, and was vengeful in life as well.
She was. She was a twisted soul.
She was a twisted soul. I don't know if she had any compulsion to do it. She just did it, and it made no. And she was going to do it again.
Yeah, and in that interview with her, and she goes, "People are going to die, and I'm not sorry." Yeah. She actually says those words. People are going to die, and I'm not sorry.
I remember that, but I remember saying, I do bad things.
Or I do bad things, and I'm not sorry. She actually says the words, I'm not sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she is basically a sociopath.
Yeah.
Right? I think she does things because she enjoys doing them.
A psychic sociopath.
Yes.
Yeah, which makes her very, very terrifying. And that's a bit of that Twilight Zone, and bury the character away. You remember the one that the Twilight Zone, it was in the Twilight Zone movie where the kid could do anything.
Well, that was more Sadako in the original, because she could will somebody to die.
Yeah. I think Samara could too.
Samara, but Samara, like, I think plays with them more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely think Samara is more sadistic.
But
than
I don't
Sadako.
Think Samara could make them do it when she was alive.
Yeah.
I think when she was alive, she could drive people insane.
Once you dive into some of the Japanese sequels, like, they're both evil little shits.
Mm-hmm. But I think, like, the American one, she couldn't make people die, but she could probably drive them insane enough to kill themselves.
I think that's the beauty of both these films. They make her seem like a victim through most of it, and she's really not.
No,
like, the people are just protecting themselves and other people around them by isolating her and whatnot and eventually getting rid of the problem. I mean, I'm not saying that they're justified in murdering Samara Sadako. I mean, I'm not sure there's much that does justify those kind of actions. But, you know, when you have this vengeful person in life and death, I don't know. I mean, what would you do to protect your family as well?
Well, and they tried. They tried hospitalizing her.
Yeah.
Right?
They did try other options before finally throwing her down.
And this brings me something to, like, in the interesting part of, like, the differences between the two films is in the original, she is actually the child of her mother. She was born of her mother. In the remake, she's some adoptee from somewhere because her mother couldn't get pregnant.
Yeah.
So, and then there's also the shift on who does the deed.
Yes, I was going to mention that as well.
I think...
at the end of it, like, I don't know if it's because in North American eyes, it's like, this woman can't have children. She can be more of a monster. I think that's an underlying theme in some films.
And it could just come down to the sensitivity of a parent killing their child. In North American audiences, might have been far more shocked about it than the Japanese audiences.
Well, they can read the news.
Can't say. Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of dark stuff, but maybe they just felt the story was dark enough that they didn't need to have it be a parent on top of it all. Like,
really? That's
a biological
why you're
gonna
hold
parent.
Back?
I'm not making excuses. I'm not sure why the change was there, and it doesn't really change much of the story. Although it does, actually, yes, it does.
It changes.
It does a lot because at least in the Japanese one, there was a lineage of power.
Yes.
You know, she had the mother had the psychic abilities, and Sadako
had them, like, tenfold.
Yeah, had them tenfold and was protective of her mother. Both of them were protective of their mother. They both loved their mother deeply. Yeah. But
I don't know if the North American one really
when there's that display of power for the scientists and reporters in the Japanese film, and the guy stands up and calls her out as fake and stuff, that's when Sadako kills one of the reporters instantly.
Yeah.
You know, and that really, they had to change that, and I don't think that relationship between mother and daughter was nearly as strong in the remake.
No,
because you kind of get they kind of basically suggest, I don't know, they already tell you that Samara is the reason that her mother went insane.
Yeah, horses are dying, lots of fish are dying, everything goes wrong around Samara.
Her mother's having hallucinations, she's going crazy.
Yeah,
who she kills herself.
A beloved member of the town at the time.
Yeah,
When things change is because of Samara. Not having a biologic connection maybe makes it easier for her to kill her, and. And she wasn't even that successful.
I don't even know if that's the case. Not having a biological connection to somebody does not make it easier to kill them. She had desperately wanted a child for her whole life. Like, do you imagine the pain at not just killing a child? Maybe you had a child. Maybe you could have another child. But you've tried so long to have a child, and you have to kill the one you have because they're driving you and everybody else insane and destroying people's lives? And you're never going to have another child?
Well, yeah.
Wouldn't that be harder?
Yeah, well, I can
see
why you would...
You're destroying everything you wanted.
Yeah, and why she would commit suicide. It's certainly driven by those points you make, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it matters if there's a biological connection or not to make that decision. I've never killed anybody. I don't know if it's
I don't
not,
either.
Right? So,
but what I'm saying is, like, to speak to that making it easier, I think... In this instance, because she'd been through so much to just try and have a child. Like, if you know you can physically have another one, I'm guessing it might be easier, actually, if she was biological.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually did find it a little more disturbing that it was her who who killed Samara, because it was the father in the Japanese movie.
She was the only one who could get close enough to Samara, I believe.
Yeah. That makes a good point, yeah.
And her mother, Samara's, and Sudoku's mother was already dead, right?
Yeah.
And the father blamed her for it, too.
Oh, yeah.
That was part of the reason that he killed her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it's... I mean, we may be overanalyzing this. It just...
Well, I mean,
that's what we do, though.
Yeah, it's a movie. Like, if you're doing this much symbolism in a movie, you got to dig deep, right? Yeah,
and Gore Verbinski goes crazy with the symbolism. Like, there is a shit ton. And I'm going to show you now. Right, well, that was the Ring trailer from Gore Verbinski's version from 2002. Screenplay for that was Aaron Kruger, which, when I look at the credits for Aaron, I can't believe this movie was this good. I mean, Arlington Road, great movie.
Yeah.
Imposter? Yeah.
Which one's Imposter?
It's fine. Don't.
Okay.
It's fine.
I'm curious. I'm a curious person.
You can look it up on your own.
I'm the person who watches these tapes.
Reindeer Games.
Oh, no.
Oh, Transformers 2 through 4. I couldn't be bothered to tell you exactly which ones those are, but 2 through 4. So it just gets worse and worse as I go down the list. I'm like, when did you give up? budgeted at $48 million, had an opening weekend of just a little over $15 million, and went on to gross $230+ worldwide. So big hit again.
Huge hit.
And... much like the Japanese one, spawned a sequel and a new one opening later this month.
Mm-hmm.
Japanese one, Jesus Christ. I'm going to actually tell you here. There is a shit ton. Swiping on my iPad, open it back up.
Ooh, shit ton of stuff. Interesting trivia, fun factoids.
Four sequels for the Japanese one. There was a prequel, Ring Zero, in 2000. Of course, The Ring was 1998. Racing, aka Spiral, was 1998 as well. Did I say? Yeah, Ring was 1998. Racing, Spiral was 1998. Ring 2 was 1999. Sudeiko 3D was 2012. Sudeiko 3D 2 was 2013. And this year was Ring versus Grudge also. And you know when you do the crossover, the proverbial and literal well has run dry.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm so sad of all this ghost-on-ghost violence.
Well, that's the thing about... I had to read a little bit about that one.
And is their Freddy versus Jason.
It was. They basically said the only way to stop Sudeiko is to have her fight another vengeful spirit, and hopefully they both kill each other. And it doesn't work out that way. Apparently, the two spirits merge together into one croaking.
Oh, before you
awfulness.
Even said that, I'm like, I bet you they join forces. See, this is why people shouldn't think like this.
And possess another person that was trying to stop them in the first place. Spoilers.
Okay, I kind of want to see that now.
I do too. I totally do.
I kind of do too.
But it's something they'll never do in America. So.
Oh, no.
I don't
know.
It's one of those, because the Japanese don't mind getting really fucking cheesy with their shit. So
they love it.
I don't know. It. I wouldn't underestimate it. I wouldn't underestimate North America doing something batshit crazy.
I like crossovers, but they're always a death knell to a franchise, isn't it?
Oh, they are.
Every time?
That
every
doesn't time. Mean, when have they stopped doing them?
Every time. I mean, AVP didn't kill either franchise.
Oh, it damn near did.
Damn near, but didn't, because Predators was great.
Because people like the Aliens and Predators so much, but boy, those are both awful. Awful, awful movies.
Which one's the one where at the very end scene you have the Predator that's impregnated by the alien? Is that AVP?
That's the first AVP, yeah. Freddy vs. Jason, a decent enough movie, but never did another one.
Oh, it was like, it was a series of sketches. You know how you get upset when there's sketches in movies? You think that something is a standalone sketch? That was that entire movie, but with kids.
And Universal Monsters, when they started meeting each other, that was kind of the end of their Universal Monster cycle back in the 40s and 50s.
Really? So. I thought it happened when they met Abbott and Costello.
Oh, that was the death knell.
That was truly it. Yes.
It was brilliant, but it was
and so much fun.
It was great. It was absolutely wonderful.
It's one of those death scenes you kind of want to watch.
Loved it. I loved it a lot. So back to Gore Verbinski's version with all the symbolism and stuff. Oh, you got something?
I had another question, too. Okay. Oh, the difference between the two, and this goes back to, like, the very beginning. In the first one, in the Japanese one, they all are, like, teens. Their heart stopped. Rah! They all look really weird. But in the remake, there's, like, the one teenager, her niece, her heart stops. But everybody else are, like, accidents and suicides. Just to make it seem a little bit more weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I kind of liked. I did like that change because then you don't automatically flip to, it's the tape.
Yeah, given the state of the bodies that are found, it seems odd that they would go with things like suicide and stuff, but whatever.
Yeah, and you know what, I kind of liked in the Japanese version where the other couple that were together when they died were... They referenced that they were about to get to it when they died. I actually kind of chuckled a little bit because I thought that was kind of funny. The coitus interruptus.
That's the urban legend. The teens in the car. Yeah. Don't do naughty stuff, teens, or you'll die.
Yeah. And exactly. But yeah, I actually like the fact that they referenced the ring because, again, it gives more credence to the whole myth. Mm-hmm. Right.
See, but I kind of like the person being a little seen as crazy for believing it's the tape.
Well, and in the American version, it works because of the way they've set that Verbinski set up the story and the screenwriter set up the story, right? Because she's not actively investigating it. They're not talking about these urban myths. This is essentially the start of this myth, right? So it works better in the American film the way they did it. But I think in the Japanese version, because the myth predates the events of the movie, and they make that clear with a Ring Zero as well, it's more effective to have them all dying in the same manner.
Yeah, the Ring Zero, by the way, it's pretty weird.
Really?
Well, we talked before the episode, but the Ring Zero, if memory serves, Sadako, the one that dies in the well and becomes the evil spirit, split off from herself, so there's a good version out in the world.
Oh, that's
and a
the one
bad
you're talking
version.
About. Okay.
And the good version grows to about 19. She's still kind of a spirit thing, but she tries to join the ballet, and I guess it gets a bit Black Swan-ish, and her competition kind of dies so she can move forward in the ballet when people start realizing...
Rewatch Black Swan.
People start making connections, and... By the end of the movie and then the novel, because I've read it as a manga, she rejoins with her evil half. So it's weird. But that's the Japanese like to go into some strange territory that sometimes doesn't translate as that well to North America. So
yeah, but see, we bought Black Swan.
I haven't seen Black Swan.
You have to watch Black Swan.
I know.
And this
Darren
will make
Aronofsky.
So much more difference.
It's Aronofsky. Sam's shaking his head, but I like Aronofsky.
You know what? I might have to give that one another chance, but I... did not enjoy it. And you know what? It might have been one of those ones where I believed the hype, right? And I don't do that very often. Usually I try not to let other people's opinions of things color my viewing experience. And that maybe would happen with The Ring as well, is because it was it had already been very successful by the time I saw it. And everyone was ranting about and raving about how good this movie was. And I'm a jaded prick.
Yeah. I do believe I saw this on an opening weekend. This was when I was living in Vancouver, doing my film school stuff. And I went into Richmond, BC, a nice big theater there. And it's a lot of Asians live in Richmond, BC. So I saw it with a probably predominantly Asian crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Totally the best crowd I could have ever seen.
The right experience.
I don't know if I would have liked that movie near as much as I did if I didn't have that particular audience at that time, because they just made it, put it at a whole different experience.
It is true. Like, I've seen some terrible movies, but you get a good audience around you, it's really enjoyable. Or like a horror movie where everybody's really scared and it's just that much scarier.
Yeah, well, I got to say, the audience was the only thing that kept me interested in Paranormal Activity. So I was watching the audience more than I was watching that movie. It just bored me to tears. But
yeah. You're the only reason I got through Piranha 3DD.
You're welcome.
I haven't seen that, thank goodness.
Don't.
But yeah, Paranormal Activity is another one where everybody was ranting and raving about what a great and scary film it was. Not so much. And again, maybe it's because I'm just jaded.
Or maybe you need to watch it at home alone at night.
Hardcore horror watchers don't tend to adapt overly well to PG horror. That's why J horror, for serious horror fans, it was very hard for it to take off. Like, I'd like a slow burn movie like The Ring, but you got to know that you're getting into if you're growing up and living off of zombie movies and slasher movies and stuff. Yeah, that's going to be really boring movies.
Titles with the word massacre in it.
Yeah, but with movies like Conjuring doing so well, that's a slow burn movie.
Yes.
But man, so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how many was it Full Moon Entertainment, that really bad B-horror movie company that we used to...
They were a B-horror movie that liked to do horror movies around puppets a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were more funny, though, weren't they? There was more... There was a winking at the camera type
thing. There's a certain amount of that.
Not in those first couple. Like, they didn't start doing it until, like, their sequels.
Mm.
Like, the first Puppet Master is a fairly straightforward and serious movie, and then they... Much like the North American, any North American horror movie, like Friday 13th started off very serious
and
before slowly getting into the camp.
Nightmare on Elm Street is fairly serious.
Just did it a little faster.
They did, yeah. I mean, and there's the Scanners movies, they never really went in that direction.
No, but they were always kind of comic book inspired movies.
Yeah. But they were a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well, weren't they basically Canadian too?
I don't think so. Charles Band is American. So.
Yeah. Scanners? Okay, yeah, I'm getting mixed up with another Cronenberg, sorry.
Yeah. And they're still around under somebody else's banner head. Like, Full Moon Entertainment still exists, but they're...
Yeah, no, they're still out there, still pumping out Puppet Master movies, but I think they kind of resurfaced with the rejiggering. I think it probably went from Full Moon Entertainment to Full Moon Productions or something, repackage just a little bit and then you come back
a new name. We're totally different.
Yeah, because I do believe that I totally remember them going under at one point, so they just managed to pull back out at some point. Basically created a new company with the same logo.
Yeah, I don't know, I enjoyed Full Moon movies.
I still love Full Moon. I like that kind of wink cheese.
Oh, stuff. Yeah.
Low budget. We're just having fun making this. Much like the Troma Entertainment stuff.
A cozy blanket of a movie. You just want to sit back and be comfy.
Yeah.
You get your popcorn and you sit back and knowing full well that this is not going to be a good movie, but it's going to be fun no matter what. That's what those movies were.
Yeah. Now, with the back to The Ring spawned a whole genre of J-horror, like,
The Grudge.
Then The Grudge came out, and there's a bunch of those.
Yeah.
And Dark Water and The Eye. I go months just on J-horror alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's not do that.
No.
We'll, for my own sanity.
No, from time to time. We'll spread it out for Sam's sanity.
Yeah.
Just, we'll see. I like charging Sam, so.
Yes, well, this is 2 weeks in a row.
We all have to take a hit.
Three?
I've had ones I've taken a hit on.
Yeah.
We all have to take
a hit. I'll take my punishment. I'll watch the movies, right? And you know what? If I hate it, then hey, you get some good differing opinions.
Oh,
right?
We've all done those movies now we've all at some point or another wagged the finger of blame.
Yes.
Yes. And I'm not blaming anybody. I see what people enjoy about these films.
Mm-hmm.
And there are parts of the movies, both movies, that I enjoy thoroughly. It's just something wasn't working for me.
I really like Japanese ghost stories and that lore that difference between what's an American ghost story and what, because I mean, I say American based in North America, because Canada and US ghost stories are pretty much the same kind of stories. Mm-hmm. So I like that cultural difference in how they view it and
how
they
behave.
Might treat it, how they behave, like the paper money stuff, and like that stuff doesn't play too much in the Ring, but maybe correct me if I'm wrong, because maybe that's in some of the subsequent sequels, because I think I've only seen the original Japanese Ring and then read the manga for some of the other ones, so I don't know what's actually in there. But you know, I've seen other Japanese ghost story myths and movies, and their vampires are different, and all their legends are different, and the spiritualism of the Japanese people is very different from North America.
And I'm not hating on J-horror, because I love Ju-on.
Ju-on is The Grudge.
Yeah,
for us, for those who are listening, Ju-on is The Grudge.
Yeah, and I like thoroughly enjoyed that one.
I
prefer it to The Ring.
I like both versions of that movie as well.
Yeah. And I prefer The Grudge to The Ring as well. So it's just
I think I like The Grudge a wee bit more than The Ring as well. Yeah. There's a certain uniqueness to The Ring where The Grudge feels like very Japanese ghost story. So when they remade it, they kept it in Japan. They were smart. Like.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very Japanese thing. We have to kind of keep it Japanese.
Yeah.
And I certainly appreciate
the context
fact that
has to be maintained because, there's only so much you can like translate over and it gets weird. And
so
people are like,
I was kind of surprised the success of that movie in North America as a remake. They just did a very good job of it. So.
See, I kind of do because I think when they get their hands on this, like other people have already started watching the J-horror. So they're like, I'm pretty sure we have an audience here. We just need to remake it in English. Like, I think if they kind of, they note the success, like when they start.
I think that was even the same director.
Yeah. Well, when they grab.
It may have been,
grab movies from like other cultures, it's because like North American audiences have decided they liked it.
Yeah. I think with the Ring, it was probably an experiment and that went very well. Just shows you the strength of Gore Verbinski as a filmmaker and the detail, the eye for detail that he has. Is quite incredible when you're just watching it from that standpoint. Having watched it a few times, I was looking for different things. And just, like I said, everything on that Ring tape fed into the mystery that they were trying to solve. Everything kind of, and it all swings back around. Again, the cyclic nature of the Ring. That cyclic nature of the Ring, you know, he never wastes any of that. And he takes that eye for detail into the pirates and stuff in a more action-orientated thing. But there's so much going on in those movies and the backgrounds and the set designs and Lone Ranger and Rango. Like, there's a lot of eye for detail in all of these things. So I'd love it to see him come back to horror.
Yeah, he's got the perfect name for horror. His first name's Gore, for crying out
loud. I know, right?
He doesn't want to be pigeonholed, guys. Yeah.
Well, he's starting to be as being the guy who directs Johnny Depp.
Just
like Tim Burton.
Out of the movies I named, The Ring is the only one that doesn't have Johnny Depp in it.
Him and Tim Burton. And I mean, what's Tim Burton done lately that's been any good?
Yeah, true.
I know. I like Frank and Weenie.
I like the original short. Yeah.
Yeah. I think The Corpse Bride was the last one I saw that I really enjoyed.
I still want to see Miss Peregrine's House for Peculiar Children.
Did he do that?
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah.
That might be the right thing for him. I don't know.
It might be. I just like to see him go back to creating his own material again.
Yeah, that's where I thought he was the strongest as well. Yeah. Imagine what he would do taking on something like The Ring.
It could be very, very,
very
interesting.
Very gothic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And which I think would very much change the tone of the film, for sure.
For sure. I don't think this... I mean, that was something Gore kind of hung on to, was some of that Japanese tone, despite being in America. Like
the
story
lighting
translate,
of it is kind of dark, too.
Yeah. Well, that gray coastal tone.
Yeah. And I mean,
the heavy rain.
Chose Seattle and Washington as
lots of right choices. But he tried to keep it with a Japanese feel, I think, in mind. Because he could have made this more of a gothic, American gothic kind of ghost story. And it probably would have worked, but I don't know if it would have been nearly as effective.
No, I think that in order for him to achieve the sub-commentary or commentary that the film has, he needed to keep it very modern. I mean, there's that one shot there where she's standing on the balcony while her ex-husband's watching the video, whose name I can't remember, sorry. But and she's looking off the balcony and she's looking into those windows. And I mean, it was maybe a little overkill, but mm-hmm. every window had a big TV and somebody's watching them.
I was going to mm-hmm. make a comment about that earlier. I love that shot. Like,
oh,
that
I love the shot. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, that shot when, yeah, she's just standing on the balcony while Noah is watching the video. And the shot's panning down and everybody's mm-hmm. watching television while kind of doing something in their normal lives, but the TV was kind of always part of it.
It's always on. It's always in the background.
A very heavy-handed commentary. Well, I found it heavy-handed.
As did I, and that's why I keep saying this. A lot of his imagery is heavy-handed in this film.
But, you know, they don't hold on to it very long, so it's not beaten over your head, but there's the message right there. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. wow, that was quite something.
He took the message that was in the Japanese version. He says, okay, there's a fucking message here. Here it is.
Yeah.
Neon sign. Boom, boom.
Yeah.
Boom.
Read more books, people.
Yeah. Talk to each other. I mean, and you know what? There could be a really great remake about that with that same subtext about our reliance on mobile devices. I mean, there's something there. I mean, new territory.
I think there's been movies like that where you can't escape because the phone is there, and you can't escape because something else is there.
Yeah, there's the one with Kristen Bell.
A being that has like electricity and can be transmitted. Like there's
shocker. Yeah, well, there's a shocker.
Well, at the end of Trick or Treat.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been, and I feel like we can't remember the name of the movie, but we saw it in the theater. We saw the preview, and it was. Where technology had taken over the ghosts had taken over the world through technology, and they had to go to technology-free zones to get away from the ghosts.
I don't remember this trailer at all.
It had
wow,
Kristen Bell, and they made like two or three sequels.
Pulse,
that's it, yes.
Pulse.
Yeah.
Another Japanese remake, by the way.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was why I mentioned that one specifically, because I knew it was a Japanese remake. So they were already doing that. But again, now it's even more prevalent as people are so attached to their devices. Mm-hmm. Right? What would happen?
We going back to the original cassette with the technology changing, and I think that's where Rings is going into new territory. Mm-hmm. Now, with prepping this, I finally watched the trailer for that film. Can't say it looks very good, sorry. But the video, Samara's video, has been uploaded to YouTube.
Oh, of course.
So it's global now. It's out there. It's playing on airplanes and that sort of thing. And like, so now they can really up the carnage of this film. And that's partially why I'm
against it
and dislike it, because it's just like, let's just go more.
You know what I would
the word viral, I guess.
Yeah. But you know what I would like the addition of it? Like, you know how she's a vengeful spirit mm-hmm. and the internet is a terrible, hateful place? And all of that just feeds her and she becomes more powerful than ever?
Well, I mean, and that's part of, I think, the commentary of like the end of the American one, when the kid's like, you helped her? You weren't supposed to do that.
You let her out.
You let her out. And by discovering her story, I don't know what that does for Sadako. It certainly doesn't, or for Samara, it doesn't really give that ghost any peace. Her peace was fucking with everything.
Yes.
You know,
well, that's the closest we could get to peace.
She never sleeps.
And I love that misdirect, by the way. Yeah. I freaking love that misdirect.
Oh, the whole movie is mm-hmm. a misdirect.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. That's the best part of the film.
She was never going to stop. The Korean remake of the film is actually called Ring Virus. The Ring Virus. And that's really what it is. Yeah. Again, going back to the cyclic nature of Samara and Sadako, she just wants to propagate. This is her way of living on
mm-hmm.
by making people relive her torture.
Yeah.
You know, and she lived for 7 days in that well.
So like the VHS tape, she was minimally contained. Sure, mm-hmm. she could get her evil out there, but she was basically contained.
And that's why she spares you if you make a copy.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're now spreading her message.
Yeah, that's right? The only thing that spares you.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I have that videotape. When Ring 2 came out, I was working at the University of Calgary, and they sent me this brown manila envelope, just no markings, just to the shop, and I open it and there's just this blank cassette with a sheet of paper with some hand scrawling on it, and having seen the first Ring, I'm like, that's awesome. I hope this is what I think it is. Brought it home, still had a VCR at the time, plopped it in. Sure enough, it's just the video, the viral video, and there's nothing else. No advertising, nothing. It's just the crazy video. That's it. I watched it.
And felt a little uncomfortable afterwards.
Felt a little uncomfortable afterwards. No phone ring. I'm like, I am so going to use this.
Nice.
I don't know what we're going to put it. I'm just going to try to make people watch this somehow by accident and then just totally have a phone ring. I'm like, this is great. This is so great. It was one of the best pieces of viral marketing I've seen.
Nice.
Pre-internet.
That's pretty slick. That's a great way to get people's
attention. Yeah, sure. And my DVD copy of The Ring has the video on there too. If you click left or click right and there's this place, don't watch this, and then click down so nothing's highlighted,
mm-hmm.
it plays the video, but you can't stop it at that point. You can't hit fast forward. Nothing works until the video plays out and finishes. I think the only thing you can do to stop it is to turn off your television.
Nice.
So it plays out right down to, and then a phone call, two rings. It's fantastic.
Cool.
Yeah.
No, and there's a lot to love about this film. And like I said, I cannot explain why I don't enjoy it more. And like I said, I don't hate this movie. Don't get me wrong. It's just, you know what? I think maybe the remake was maybe just 10, 15 minutes too long, because they did add about 20 minutes mm-hmm. to the running time.
Yeah. It does, even like the original feels a bit slow, but you know, at 96 minutes, finishes, but it does feel like a bit of a slog.
I would say the one disappointment I have with the remake is they go visit the friend in the mental hospital, but I didn't mm-hmm. feel that really did anything.
It was
anything.
Completely unnecessary. It was...
Yeah, that was actually, they mention that in the Japanese one.
But they don't do it.
No, they just say she can't, just tell you that she can't be anywhere near a television.
And see, in my head,
that's fine. That's all you really need. We didn't need to see her walking down a hallway with a blocker.
But like, it's in my head. I kind of wanted to see the crazy friend, but then when they did it in the remake, I was really disappointed. I'm like, they didn't do kind of what I was expecting them to do.
It was one of the moments, one of the rare moments that I didn't feel like does anything.
Yeah.
No, there's no purpose to it. So that's why I was kind of upset. I'm like, no, you could do so much with that. Like, that would be a great, you could make that moment amazing, but they don't do it.
The only thing that she's obviously been touched by Samara lately, because she knows
how many days she has left.
Yeah, she knows just subconsciously how many days Rachel has left because she's been touched by Samara. So there is a certain link there, but because she never physically watched the tape, she's safe, but she's fucking nuts because of what she's experienced
by it,
you know, seeing her friends that way. Yeah, and I totally get why that would fuck you up.
Oh yeah,
but it
see,
doesn't
I would like
really,
other stuff
yeah that, it doesn't really establish anything other than say yeah, you know.
See, yeah, I'd like her to be like lightly touched, but like have other creepy shit, like when she's near a TV some weird stuff happens, like it never actually comes in, or like just...
Well, that would be an interesting place to go with the sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, she finally gets to a fairly normal place. There's just enough of Samara touched her that can really fuck with
her. Yeah, like she's maybe she's working like in some like fishing and hunting lodge out somewhere else where like there's no television. She feels safe out there. But like you say, we always have technology with us and it gets to her.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, the trailer for Rings looks like Samara is trying to get reborn. Somehow. I don't know.
Like, not Bride of Chucky. What's the other one?
Well, yeah, I guess they kind of did one of that in one of the Chucky movies.
Yeah, they did, yeah. Son of Chucky. All of the Chucky movies are that. He's trying to get reborn.
Yeah, that is the purpose of all of them, I guess. So
he doesn't want to be a fucking doll.
I like that she just wanted to torture. I think she, that character didn't change in life or death.
Yeah, this evil, vengeful spirit, right? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that device.
Yeah.
There's literally nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
And
didn't they try to do that in Freddy 5?
Nightmare on Elm
Street
5?
Yeah.
The Dream Child or something?
Yeah. That's when things really go off the rails. Man, the more I talk about Rings, the less I want to see it. I was going to run the trailer, but now fuck that.
Yeah. I don't know. I have some hopefulness.
Go to the movie and make up your own mind. Like, I'm excited for another Ring movie. I really am. But the trailer certainly didn't allow me, which means I am not getting any sponsorship from Paramount or whoever released that fucking thing. I think. Well, no, I guess it was DreamWorks the first time. So
yeah. It was DreamWorks. Yeah. And I, you know, I wanted to mention the opening sequence there where they with the production credits and I love how they had like the videotape scratch throughout in it. I like, mm-hmm. did they that's awesome, right?
Actually, in that opening bit, that whole Gore Verbinski plays out the entire viral video in just those quick cerebral flashes. It's all there.
Oh, nice.
It's all there.
That is awesome.
It's very Fight Club.
There's subtle hints.
Yeah. So, man, I mean, he spent a lot of time really wowing you with that movie.
Yeah. No, and that's why he's continues to be able to make movies, right? Is because he does take the time to make sure that everything that he wants you to see is there.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And even the things you don't realize you're seeing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, well, not just that. Like, I mean, he does care for the content.
Yeah.
The content itself, like you say, the loving remake. That's what matters.
It really is,
This is actually one of the few times where I think the American remake is a bit stronger than its source material.
I would agree.
I do enjoy the American one, and others might disagree, but I enjoy the American one more than the Japanese one. I think maybe just because it gives me a little more layers. I certainly enjoyed the strained relationship Rachel has with her son, and it doesn't resolve. Her son calls her Rachel, not mom.
Yes.
Rachel. Yeah. And you have this expectation that maybe that will go somewhere and get resolved. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Well, when you're talking about...
Which I think is even great. Yeah. Like, there's still work to be done.
They have a weird relationship, but here's the other part, too. He's also... The psychic element is in that movie, but it's her son, not her ex-husband.
Yeah. Okay. And they, thankfully, are soft-footed with him.
Yes. Like, yeah, it's very, very... gently handled.
Yeah. He's the little things like in the artwork and they go multiple layers. Like, yeah, okay, maybe he possibly knew his cousin was going to die. Well, you see that it hinted in the artwork.
Yeah.
But nothing's really said and pushed forward like that. Like, there's just something in the back of his mind where that's there.
They do get there.
It seems stronger.
He is psychic.
It seems stronger once he's seen the video.
It seems stronger.
It's something
stronger.
That's been pulled a little more forward after he saw the video.
Yeah, and that's
it's very subtle before.
Yeah, it's present in the original as well. I mean, because he's talking to Tomoko.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he's actually talking to her. She's saying, Tomoko told me to watch it, right?
Yeah, so, but everybody's fucking psychic in that movie.
Yes.
Yeah, but then why is it okay for the son to be psychic in this one and not in the other?
Because it's not everybody.
It's not everybody in the original one. Good God, it's fucking not. Nuts. It's not. There's She's being pulled in by a hallucination.
There are three, four characters in that movie.
The father and the son are the only ones.
It's Sadako, her mother... The father of the kid, Ryuji, and the kid. Four fucking people in the same movie. Not two, four.
Well, Samara is in the original one, in the new one, too, so there's three.
It's Samara and the kid.
Samara and the kid.
So it's only the two, yeah. But, you know, I almost wonder if... Now I'm wondering with all this psychic shit, and you guys are getting way worked up about it.
She's getting me worked up about it because she.
I think it's fine.
I have my interpretation. She is his.
And
punishing me for having my own opinion. Apparently,
no. I'm just disagreeing because you seem to be painting it all on there. You're like, oh, this person has to be psychic because this happens.
I think it's the weakest part.
But in
part
the other
of the
one,
movie.
It doesn't have to be psychic because I don't believe they're psychic. That's the thing. You'll paint them with a brush in one movie when the exact same shit happens.
Oh no!
That's what bothers
me. It's just
me.
So heavy-handed in the first movie. It's just pushed at you, where it's subtly built.
So you want
built.
Subtle psychicness and not no psychicness?
No, I don't want every fucking character to be psychic. it's a cheat. It is pushing the narrative forward through a nonsensical moment.
At yeah, but it no explains point, explains no, Sadako's shush, psychicness.
Shut up! At no point. In the American one is the psychicness of the kid pushing that plot forward. It's not a necessary device, but it's a subtle device. In the other one, you kind of need it to move forward. And it's such a fucking cheat. You're not doing it through the narrative of the film. It's just, here it is. Oh, by the way, I'm also psychic.
Well, the narrative explains why her daughter is psychic. That drives the narrative forward.
Whose daughter? Sorry.
Like, the mother is psychic. That's why Sadako is psychic.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. But with Ryoji, that doesn't make any fucking sense to me.
So that's the part that's bothering you. It's the father. The father's...
So just the father.
Yeah.
I don't care. But this
so
is
her
the fact
son's
that
fine.
You
well.
Suddenly every like, why are these other characters investigating it suddenly psychic as well? I just will shut up about the other one. I believe she is, and you don't. So that's fine.
She's not.
But it's a cheat that's pushing their investigation forward rather than finding it out through investigation, which the American one handles very well.
Yeah. Now, to get into my point.
Okay. I feel like we got two different interpretations of what we watched.
And you know what? And that's fine. That's what happens. But I almost wonder if they were almost trying to set it up so that there's a blood link between girl, Samara, or Sudoku, or mm-hmm. Sudoku. I can never say
it. Sadako.
Sadako.
Sadako, by the way. Either way,
yeah, we're both wrong. And I knew I wasn't saying
there's
it right.
There's no you at the end of it.
Sadako.
Regardless, if there's a blood connection between those characters and our leads in this movie. And I wonder if that's where that psychic connection is supposed to be.
Now, that would be more interesting if there was. That would certainly make an explanation. And maybe that is something in some of the subsequent sequels that is there.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. at least within The Ring 2, those characters come back, the ones that are still living. That would make it okay for me. If that got explained in some... That there's some distant relation there or some relationship...
Somehow tied together.
That would make more sense to me.
Yeah, and I think it'd be really interesting, too.
You know, and I like the idea of maybe that being brought out through the videotape. Or, well, see...
Well, the
actually,
videotape
you know
is causing hallucinations.
You know what would be really cool? Like, the one that didn't watch the tape,
mm-hmm.
but has experienced some of these things that has happened because of the tape, was, you know, around a victim. Mm-hmm. And suddenly he's now been touched by it. To pull that something, little extra something out of that character, you know, that touch of Sadako or Samara, mm-hmm. in this case, could bring out something a little deeper, you know, some psychic connection to Samara or Sadako. That would be cool. I like that, because mm-hmm. there's a link, there's some kind of explanation to it, it's just not sudden. And if they did that in the Japanese one, further down the line with some of those sequels, great. That would... explain things to me mm-hmm. in a logical way. And as a standalone film, him being psychic didn't make a lot of sense. They don't lead up to it. They don't present it earlier.
It
also, part of it is culturally different.
Sure.
Japan has more of a kind of... The thing, part of it is, in the original, his psychicness is that shame that he has
mm-hmm.
because he is different. That's a thing in Japan.
You know what? That could be something there, yeah.
Whereas in the North American version, his shame is he's an immature guy who doesn't take care of his kid. That's how they translated it.
Yeah, you know.
Because he has to be a figure of shame in a certain way, and that has to be a problem in their relationship.
Yeah, I'm totally
so I think that's
that
part of what drove that.
Yeah. I mentioned it earlier. There's that moment when he first shows up, and he shows up fairly late to look at that tape. And it does, like, I feel like he maybe is sensing something there, but they don't really go any further with it. And they don't give you any more hints of it until he right.
So it's really the abruptness of the way it's happened.
Yeah,
it's more so than anything else.
Yeah. I think maybe if they've did a little bit more along the way to give you more elements of that reveal.
Yeah.
I would have been more okay with it. It just happens so fast that it bothers me.
And out of context. And
yeah.
I can see why that bothers you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? It's the way it was handled more so than the actual...
Yeah.
Concept.
It almost popped me out of the movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just... Like, I was really just sitting there going, fuck off.
I think we're so used to here, it's when you bring a psychic into a movie... They're like somebody who works at like a psychic thing. Like, they're known at the beginning.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've seen this in Exorcist and things like mm-hmm. that. And that's fine because it's part of an investigation into something.
I think it's
because
they're introduced
explained as
that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're introduced as that psychic or whatever, not just suddenly are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, I mean, I can certainly, as your explanation, I can certainly see why he'd hide it. But when the two are together, she mm-hmm. should, you know, I would assume she was already aware of this talent.
Yeah, I assume that
maybe
was
something a little bit more. And maybe that just got cut.
Yeah. Like, I think there's maybe a cut scene, because I assumed that was sort of the problem with their relationship as well, is she didn't feel comfortable with that.
Oh, yeah. Her thoughts are never her, just her own.
Because because he says they should never have had a child. And you talk about the child having a bit of a...
True, yeah. And I bet you that plays in a sequel or something.
Yeah, yeah. Or out of some cut scenes or something like that, because that's where I was going to go, is because that's exactly right. He says we never should never have had a kid.
Yeah. And well, then look what happened to another person. There, now that's starting to come
there
together.
There we go.
Yeah.
I'm just realizing this, too. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, right. This grand realization of that, why
the
he
parallels.
Would say that. Yeah, there's a parallel to what's going on. So suddenly, I mean, their child could be the next Sudeiko.
And now we're remaking this movie.
Maybe we're figuring out what they've already done. Yes. Like, who knows? Yeah. Like, this could already be part of their lore.
Yes.
Because we haven't seen
the kid's
those.
Disturbed in both movies. That kid is fucking weird.
Yeah. Right. That's true. That's true. The kid's weird in both movies.
Yeah.
The kid seems way older than it is. Like, the kid is small, but, like, the kid in the original is tiny. I'm like, I thought he was four.
But you know what? Mm-hmm. He's spending all of his time alone, too. And that's one of the things that bothers me about the original, is that kid... She's a shitty fucking mother.
Oh, yeah. She's
a shitty mother in both movies.
Yeah, but not as terrible. Bad.
But Gore Verbinski makes a point of telling that story and what the effect is on that child. Yeah. They just jump that kid with his grandfather, but whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, she does it to her sister in the remake.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. There is that moment where she has to give him over to a relative because she's gone too long.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean... In Verbinski's version, you don't get the impression that he's alone all the time. Like, she's always got somebody. Like, she's late a lot, but she's he's not alone, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas in the Japanese version, that kid goes home, runs up his own meals, puts himself to bed.
Oh, he's so self-sufficient. So this has been going a long time.
Yeah, it's been going on a long time. And, I mean, the kid has already been established as he's very mature for any age at this point. Mm-hmm. He's more mature than I am.
He gets her dress ready for her when they have to go to the funeral.
I mean, he's kind of come the man of the house. He's aware that his father's been watching, but doesn't really know that Noah's his father. Just he's caught him snapping pictures or whatever a few times.
Yeah, like that.
That's a layer of creepiness.
What's weird is there's the moment in both movies where they kind of see each other, and then the kid trundles off on his own.
Yeah.
Like, I was really unclear in both movies. Do they recognize each other?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I don't think the kid does.
I want to talk about the differences in relationships between the ex-husbands, Ryuji and Noah. I get the feeling in the Japanese movie that Ryuji and Reiko got their divorce because he was fucking around. Like, I get the feeling he's been sleeping with his students based on that movie.
Yeah, I got that impression too. Is that he's got questionable morals?
Yeah,
in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because that student who shows up, you kind of get the impression that she's showing up for a little fun time.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Which kind of goes back to the old trope of you got to give even a minor negative to justify. Their deaths. It's like Jason and Freddy or whatever. You know, you go smoke pot or have sex, underage sex or whatever. You know, it's that thing that justifies their death.
They kind of hinted in the remake too.
Yeah. Well,
because he's got that quote unquote journalism student who's living at his house.
But I got the feeling that was more of a story because he's still interested in his ex-wife. And because she's definitely older than the student in the Japanese one.
But that might just make it more palatable because they kind of tacked on the love story it felt in the American one.
Yeah, well, with Noah, at least it felt like he had a girlfriend. Like, and he was trying more to cover up the fact that he had a girlfriend. Whereas the other one felt like, ooh, dude, you're dicking around with your students.
See,
that's gross.
It's weird. It seems like it's flipped a bit because it seems in the remake, Noah is trying to hide that he's hanging out with his ex with his new girlfriend rather than the other one.
I think that's more of a because he still has he's trying to play both sides. Like he's got a girlfriend, but he probably would dump her in a hot second to get back with his
wife. But he's not going to do that until he's absolutely certain.
Yeah, he's just playing hedging his bets. Yeah. He's less lecherous than the one in the Japanese movie. That's what I'm saying. They softened him up to make him more likable.
And he was more likable. to be honest. And in the Japanese version, you got the feeling that the relationship between Reiko and Ryuji was strained all the time. But as they're going through this process together, they start to see what they loved about each other again. And I really found that touching. I actually enjoyed that little subtext in the movie.
I thought that it was
they kind of fell in love again.
Yeah,
because there felt like there was more animosity in the Japanese one.
Yeah,
when the girl shows up, it kicks off a little bit of a spat on Rachel's part. Because I think maybe she has those feelings.
Oh, a lot of a spat.
There's a lot of a spat. And he's perfectly in his right to move on. Like, they're not
together anymore,
but obviously there's mutual interest there, and she's punishing him a little bit for moving on without her.
Yeah.
Well,
and
I
hiding
don't know.
It, and hiding that fact.
Yeah, I think it's A, hiding it, and B, she's like, it's the same thing, like, if he's moved on with, like, this young student, that's a little bit of an affront. Like, it seems insulting. I think that's probably why she's upset as part of it.
Yeah, in the remake, they feel more like a couple that still wants to be together rather than one that grows more in love with each other. I mean, they definitely move in that direction with the hand-holding near the end. Just to have that rug pulled out when he dies.
Yeah, but I like how they handled it better in the Japanese movie.
Yeah, that part was better, I think, in the Japanese movie.
Yeah,
there's that tension, but it's an unsaid. Yeah. They go away.
And the way they look at each other near the end of the film after they've gotten out of the well, and this is just shows to how talented these actors are, because there's a look they give each other, and you just see that they have fallen in love again, or they're starting to fall in love again.
Oh, speaking of the well.
There's nothing more about imminent death that gets people back together.
Yeah, being back together. Yeah. Speaking of the well in the remake, a lot less gross than the original.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't. In the original, I'm like,
they spent a lot of time in there.
That's disgusting.
One of the things that drove me fucking nuts about the first
one. You're going to try to empty it.
Yeah, they're like, why? Why are you doing that?
That's what I said, too. Like, why are we doing this?
Take a shovel down there and start, like, swirling. You can find something.
Yeah, right? That's what would have been my first thing.
And it added, what, 6-7 minutes to the film?
Yeah.
It's long.
It's long.
But I think the main horror of it is, like, for me, I have this thing about hair. I can't clean my drain. I vomit. And like, being in a well and there's just, like, this disembodied hair, I was like, I was so upset.
Okay, so off air, I discovered she doesn't like spiders, and now hair in her drains.
Oh, well, the Naomi Watts one where the hair comes out of her throat, I couldn't look.
Oh, yeah, with the electrode at the end of it.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, but that's become such a visual moment for that franchise now. Yeah. That pulling of the hair out of the throat. And it does. It's gross.
It's so disgusting.
Actually, the visual that's most disturbing for me is the fingernails. Like, in the video, popping up and then finding it embedded in the well wall. Yeah. I'm like, I could feel my own hands have sympathy pains.
And in the original, when she's trying to scrape along, but there's nothing to scrape with, they're all gone.
Everybody knows just how that pain is back. When you're
just hangnail.
Yeah, just having your nail bend back. So everybody's kind of familiar with that.
It's grown, like, men cry, okay?
I
know.
Ha.
Yeah, and there's always just a little tear. Always.
Just breaking a nail sometimes.
So
like,
that one makes me squirm a lot.
You're very right to squirm. It's terrible. That's why they torture people by pulling out their fingernails.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We could stop talking about it.
I'm actually starting to squirm a little bit right now.
See, that's the thing. Some of the horror, like when they have these gross out movies where it's like a whole bunch of blood and gross stuff, that doesn't scare me and gross me out as much as some other things that are just simple.
Yeah.
Like fingernails and hair.
Yeah. And you have to show it, like, just like Jay said, just seeing the fingernails there, and you just know what happened.
Yeah,
and that's the best kind of horror.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because with these films, these J horror films, and especially Ring does it effectively in both films, is you're putting together the story in your own head as well, and the horror is painted in your head. Like, that's a disgusting. But there's not much in the way of actual horror on the screen, but just that knowing of what went on there in your head, like, that all happens in your mind.
Yeah,
and
it does. Yeah,
just enough visual cues to make that happen.
Yeah, and that's when I find horror works really well.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Trish and I were talking about how there aren't very many movies that have actively scared me or gotten in my head where I'm like, where like I can't sleep or get, like, that caused me to have disturbing dreams. I don't have disturbing dreams. I love nightmares, but just for the record. Every movie that has done that has been a movie that's had something that's gotten into my head. We were talking about one. I was quite young, but it got in my head. And believe it or not, Battlestar Galactica was one of the very few films that ever gave me
bug guys.
The bug guys. They actively gave me nightmares.
Because, me too.
See, I'm not the only one.
Okay. I was about that. I'm only a year or two younger than you, and I saw that in the theater, the movie version before it went to television. And oh yeah,
that first night guys. Under the blankets.
Oh,
you're under the blankets, and you've got that pressure against you, and you're thinking about those people in those honeycombs.
Yeah,
and it gets in your fucking head.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're 10 or 8 years old, or 11, or whatever you are, but you're definitely a kid.
I imagine a kid at that age, having maybe seen the original Matrix movie, something similar with all the bodies as power cells and stuff, would probably be very similar reaction. Like that would be the more modern idea, because I'm sure a lot of our viewers are going, "You old fucks, what are you talking about?" I saw Battlestar Galactica, and they're probably thinking of that, you know, that more recent television
or
series.
Mimic, or I'm trying to think, there's a few other ones where people are like attached to the side of things. Like there was a Resident Evil, I think people were in like a cocoon.
Mm. But the fact that the bug people were eating these people was what really gets in your head, right?
Yeah,
is you're trapped under your covers in the dark. You've just seen this movie and you're thinking,
yep,
something's gonna fucking eat me.
Or like you've seen something with bugs, and you like every once in a while you feel something, you swear something's creeping and crawling on you.
I just have to see a bug and I get itchy.
They don't bug me now, but in the, when they I was don't 10 bug years you. Old, they I did use that word on purpose. But when I was 10 years old, boy, did that get in my head. And that's one of the few that actually did.
Yeah, it's when you're younger, more impressionable. It's like those big sci-fi things, not a big deal, but yeah, the bugs and eating people and cocooned, and yeah, that's gross.
So, I think it's a somewhat realistic threat is what bothers people the most.
Yeah.
But yeah, everything else that's ever kind of gotten in my head is because the movie got into my head while I was watching it and made me visualize what had happened rather than showing it to me.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's why the J horror works so well in pretty much as a genre, is the way they tell stories is, we're going to give you the pieces, but you have to put it together yourself for a lot of it. I mean, we're going to give you some fun stuff to keep you entertained, but ultimately this is going to happen in your head.
Mm.
Right. And I think that's the best kind of film in general, not just horror, but any kind of film where they involve you in it by making you part of the story.
Yeah.
Even subconsciously, those are the best kind of films.
Yeah. Well, I want to know what got into our audience's head. What is what is the movie that most disturbed you? Or even a moment in a movie. Like Sam and I were just that moment in a sci-fi movie of Battlestar disturbed us as children. What is that moment in a movie that disturbs you most? You can tell me, or Sam, or Trish, over at Twitter, at Invasion Remake, our own Twitter feeds are over there as well. Invasion of the Remake on Facebook, and of course, Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com. Like us, share us. My God, we like what you've got done so far. Share us out to all your friends if you dig the show, especially when me and Trish fight.
we get over it, though. We're good at this. We get over
it. For me,
it
feels like mom and dad fighting, and I get uncomfortable. Not going
to
lie.
It is. It's funny because he doesn't want to get involved.
Sam, sometimes mom and dad fight, but that doesn't mean we're going to break up.
I'm well aware of that. But
the show will be here.
The show will be here.
So if you like it when we fight, share us with your friends. Share the fight. Go rate that fight over on iTunes. Give it 5 stars. Rate the fight. There could have been another, I don't know, there needed to be an extra headlock in there somewhere, a suplex, something.
I don't know, the realization at the end of it was pretty good.
Yeah, we were like, oh. we got there.
Yeah. That's a good fight.
That was a good fight. That was our movie fight.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've had others.
Oh, we've had.
Yeah, whatever. You can go back and listen to our library and try to figure out where they are.
Go back and share them.
That's right. So that was The Ring, We're also, by the way, we're not just on iTunes. We're on YouTube. We're on Stitcher. We're on
Google Play.
Player FM, Google Play Music. Google Play Music. Mm-hmm. Stitcher, Player FM, iTunes.
Tune in.
Audio Boom, TuneIn Radio. Any app worth its salt, we're mm-hmm. there. So if you're not on an Apple device that recently got upgraded to iOS 10, then you can go and, you know, we're on Android. We're everywhere. So tell all your friends, and then on your Android device, once you've listened to us and thought it was awesome, then go on your computer, hop on iTunes, give us a better rating mm-hmm. over there, because there's a lot of people on iTunes.
Yes.
And
yes,
that
please.
Really helped us out. So thank you for, we got a couple of reviews now on iTunes and some ratings. We need some more that'll help us get featured and more earballs, as Trish likes to call it, more earballs on the show.
Yes.
Listen to us. Love us.
We need justification in love.
We do. We do. Don't make us send videotapes of us to your house.
You don't want to see those.
We'll show up in a week, but it'll just be with pizza and beer. That's
Maybe you do want to see those.
Yeah, I don't know. It's starting to sound all right.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. We'll make them watch Fan Challenge. That's what we'll do.
Oh, that was a good episode. It was a terrible movie to watch, but it was a great episode to listen to. We definitely had fun on that one. So that's it for The Ring. We got 3 more weeks in October. It's all going to be horror, people. So if you're not into horror, sucks to be you. But we know our audience. And
yeah,
we built this show starting with horror. So we know you guys are good. We know you guys love this month and been waiting for it. We always kind of trickle them through the year, waiting for the month of October to really go crazy. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about some ideas. One idea we were mm-hmm. thinking about maybe is taking an American movie and doing a J-horror spin on it. But as we've been discussing through this episode, I don't know if we fully understand it.
No.
So I'm not sure if that's going to be that great of an idea. But I don't know. We'll come up with something next week. Yeah. I'm not sure what we're doing yet. We'll be back here again. So I've been Jason.
I'm Sam.
I'm Trish.
And we'll see you in 7 days. We're out of here.